Hello and welcome to the World Transformation Movement's Freedom Essay Series. I'm Tim McCartney-Snape and this is Freedom Essay 16. The Shock of Change That Understanding the Human Condition Brings by Jeremy Griffith, 2022. In this presentation, biologist Jeremy Griffith describes how to manage the inevitable shock of change that the arrival of understanding of the human condition brings. This presentation appears as video 16 in the main videos towards the top of our homepage at www.humancondition.com. The transcript of this audio is also available as one of the key books on our homepage. Summary from the back cover of The Shock of Change. As biologist Jeremy Griffith explains in the interview, which psychiatrist Professor Harry Prosen described as the most important interview of all time, while we humans lack the explanation for our 2 million year corrupted human condition, we had no choice but to deny that our distant ape ancestors lived in a state of cooperative and loving innocence. But with the good reason for our corrupted condition now finally found, our species' original state of innocence can at last be admitted. And, as Griffith makes clear in his essay, The Great Guilt, what that honesty finally allows us to see is the immense guilt and shame we humans have been carrying for corrupting our original instinctive self or soul. Finding the redeeming understanding of our corrupted condition also means we no longer need to employ the artificial reinforcements we have been depending on to sustain our sense of self-worth of attacking, defying, and denying the implication that we are guilty, bad people. What this essay, The Shock of Change That Understanding the Human Condition Brings, addresses is how to manage the great shock of change that inevitably occurs in this fabulous transformation from having to depend on our now obsoleted, artificial, angry, egocentric, and alienating forms of reinforcement to living free of them.
Welcome to this July 2022 presentation about managing the shock of change that inevitably occurs with the arrival now of the all-wonderful, all-meaningful and all-exciting human condition resolve new world for you and for the whole human race. Now, you might like to print out the transcript of this talk to help you follow what will be explained. This shock of change stage is highlighted with a red circle in my drawing of humanity's journey from ignorance to enlightenment. You can see that humanity has progressed from an innocent but ignorant childhood. Then when we became conscious some 2 million years ago through an upset, angry, egocentric and alienated human condition afflicted adolescence. Adolescence being the stage in which we search for our identity, in particular for understanding of why we corrupted our original state of innocence. With the finding of that understanding, humanity enters an enlightened adulthood in which we are secure in our understanding of ourselves. What the red circle highlights is the initial shock of change that the human race is now going through following the arrival of this dreamed-of ability to finally understand ourselves. As I said, this talk is about managing that particular paradigm-shifting shock of change. Now, before getting into this talk about the shock of change that understanding of the human condition brings, I want to show you this picture of the fossilized skulls of our ancestors, under which I've included descriptions of the psychological stages of maturation that each ancestor was going through. These stages are all explained in Chapter 8 of my book, Freedom. This sequence also indicates that our big brain with its large association cortex or thinking conscious cortex appeared some 2 million years ago, which corresponds to the top of the first hill in my humanity's journey picture. The red zigzag is where the upset human condition began with the emergence of consciousness and its conflict with our instincts. Interestingly, the pronounced neotenized, childlike, domed forehead, wide-eyed, snub-nosed features of us humans today, Homo sapiens sapiens, also indicates how much we've been chasing the image of innocence for sexual destruction in the latter part of our 2-million-year journey through upset, which is a tragic development that is explained in paragraph 787 of Freedom. So to now address the issue of the immense shock of change that the arrival of the dreamed of human race liberating understanding of the human condition can't help but cause. Now, firstly, I need to emphasize that during our 2-million-year adolescent stage, which we're just coming out of, when we couldn't explain our corrupted condition, we had no choice other than to live in denial of it. Until we found understanding of our corrupted condition, denial of it saved us from unbearable condemnation. As I point out in all my writings, without the redeeming understanding of our species' upset, corrupted, fallen human condition, and of our own upset, corrupted, fallen condition as a result of it, it's been impossible for virtually anyone to confront and be honest about the human condition. We couldn't face and be honest about the corruption of our original, all-loving and all-sensitive, instinctive self or soul while we couldn't explain why we were seemingly so stupid, irresponsible, and at fault for destroying such a beautiful existence. We couldn't face the truth of our corrupted condition while we were unable to defend ourselves against the implication that behaving in such a non-loving, divisive, competitive, and aggressive, psychologically upset way meant we were bad, worthless, even evil beings. This situation left us collectively and individually with no choice but to keep adding more and more layers of protective denial to cope with the horror of our ever-increasing soul-corrupted and soul-corrupting condition. Because any time we tried to go back and confront and be honest about our corrupted condition only reconnected us with the unbearable, depressing implication that we were bad, worthless, soul-destroying, evil monsters. So this is where the whole human race has been trapped, having no choice but to accept that until the human race's great heroic upsetting search for knowledge finally led to the finding of the redeeming, relieving and healing good reason for why we corrupted our soul, almost everyone had no choice but to resign themselves to having to hide in Plato's dark cave of denial of our soul corrupted and soul corrupting human condition. And this process of resignation is explained in Freedom Essay 30. And Plato's cave allegory is described in video Freedom Essay 11. Certainly, we could gain some artificial reinforcement and relief for our immensely distressed, guilt-ridden, insecure situation by winning as much power, fame, fortune and glory as we could. And then certainly, through taking up support of a religion where we deferred to the soundness and truthful words of a prophet, we could to some degree counter the dishonest denial of our corrupted condition. And we could certainly find some superficial makes you feel good relief from being so corrupted by supporting a pseudo-idealistic movement like the political correct woke movement or the environmental green movement. And we could certainly try to superficially therapize our corrupted condition by calming our distressed mind through such practices as meditation or by taking mind-altering drugs or by undertaking a course of positive thinking or even a course in mind-disconnecting non-thinking. But such artificial reinforcements of our corrupted condition or partial honesty about being corrupted or escapist relief from being corrupted or superficial therapy for our corrupted condition still left virtually everyone firmly stuck in Plato's cave of denial, unable to confront and be honest about the unbearably depressing issue of our soul-corrupted and soul-corrupting, seemingly human race-destroying human condition. Without the redeeming biological explanation for our corrupted condition, denial of it was all that has been possible for virtually everyone. So yes, we could find any number of ways to achieve some superficial and artificial relief from the shame and insecurity caused by our species' 2 million-year corrupted condition. But without the redeeming explanation for it, virtually everyone has been trapped, having to live out their lives as a desperately insecure, almost totally dishonest and deluded human. The truth is, human life has been a life of excruciating torture. I mean, sure, we had to try to hide the fact that we've been living such a horrible existence by putting on a brave face and maintaining an outward happy and positive appearance. Because again, if we were honest about our horrifically soul-corrupted and soul-corrupting condition, it only made living in that state unbearably, suicidally depressing. Denial has been our stock in trade, our only way of coping. Being stuck in Plato's dark cave of denial and pretense and delusion has been the life virtually all humans have heroically had to endure for some 2 million years. As the essay on resignation explains, during adolescence, almost everyone had no choice but to resign themselves to blocking out the truth of their and almost everyone else's horrifically soul-corrupted and soul-corrupting condition, and instead of pretend that they were living a happy, secure, guilt-free, sound, well-adjusted, everything is fine, I'm a good person life. But every child who came into this world of resigned adults knew it was an almost totally dishonest and deluded, seemingly completely mad, extremely soul-destroyed, utterly artificial and superficial world. These pre-resigned lyrics from the young American heavy metal band With Life in Mind reveal the truth about the real nature of our world. So I'll just read them. It scares me to death to think what I have become. So these are the true words of an unresigned adolescent. It scares me to death to think what I have become. I feel so lost in the world. Our innocence is lost. I scream to the sky, but my words get lost along the way. I can't express all the hate that's led me here and all the filth that swallows us whole. I don't want to be part of all this insanity, famine and death, pestilence and war. A world shrouded in darkness, fear is driven into our minds everywhere we look, trying so hard for a life with such little purpose, lost in oblivion. Everything you've been told has been a lie. We've all been asleep since the beginning of time. Why are we so scared to use our minds? Keep pretending, soon enough things will crumble to the ground. If they could only see the truth, they would coil in disgust. How do we save ourselves from this misery, so desperate for the answers? We're straining on the last bit of hope we have left. No one hears us hears our cries. No one sees us screaming. This is the end. Now, this is a similar truthful description of the mad with pain and anger, utterly dishonest and deluded, resigned world that we've been living in. And this time it comes from Christ, who had one of the most honest, denial-free, sound minds in recorded history. You can see my description and demystification of Christ in Freedom Essay 39. bitterness of the fire that blazes in the bodies of men and in their marrow, kindling in them night and day, and burning the limbs of men and making their minds become drunk and their souls become deranged. Woe to you captives, for you are bound in caverns. So that's another Plato-like reference to being imprisoned in a cave. You laugh. In mad laughter you rejoice. You neither realize your perdition, nor do you reflect on your circumstances, nor have you understood that you dwell in darkness and death. On the contrary, you are drunk with the fire and full of bitterness. Your mind is deranged on account of the burning that is in you, and sweet to you are the poison and the blows of your enemies. And the darkness rose for you like the light, for you surrendered your freedom for servitude. You darkened your hearts and surrendered your thoughts to folly, and you filled your thoughts with the smoke of the fire that is in you. And your light has hidden in the cloud of darkness, and the garment that is put upon you, you pursued with deceit. And you were seized by the hope that does not exist. And who is it that you have believed? Do you not know that you all dwell among those who lie? And you boast as though you had hope. You baptized your souls in the water of darkness. You walked by your own whims. Now, this amazingly honest quote comes from the book of Thomas, which is a recording of a conversation Christ had with one of his disciples called Thomas. And I might mention, because I think it's very interesting, that earlier in this conversation, when Christ says to Thomas, "It's been said that you are my twin and true companion," I think Christ is referring to Thomas being one of those rare, unresigned people like himself. And such a person would have been a true companion in Christ's lonely task of defying the cave-dwelling, dishonest world of denial that we live in. The great Scottish psychiatrist, Ardy Lang, was equally honest about our corrupted, soul-destroying and repressing, split from our true selves or soul, alienated condition, when he wrote that our alienation goes to the roots. The realization of this is the essential springboard for any serious reflection on any aspect of present interhuman life. We are born into a world where alienation awaits us. We are potentially men, but are in an alienated state. The ordinary person is a shriveled, desiccated fragment of what a person can be. As adults, we have forgotten most of our childhood, not only its contents, but its flavor. As men of the world, we hardly know of the existence of the inner world. The condition of alienation, of being asleep, of being unconscious, of being out of one's mind, is the condition of the normal man. Between us and it, which is our soul, there is a veil which is more like 50 foot of solid concrete. Des abscondus, we have absconded. The outer, divorced from any illumination from the inner, is a state of darkness. We are in a state of, in an age of darkness. The state of our outer darkness is a state of sin, i.e. alienation or estrangement from the inner light. We are all murderers and prostitutes. We are bemused and crazed creatures, strangers to our true selves and to one another. We are dead but think we are alive. We are asleep but think we are awake. We are dreaming but take our dreams to be reality. We are the halt, lame, blind, deaf and sick. But we are doubly unconscious. We are so ill that we no longer feel ill, as in many terminal illnesses. We are mad but have no insight into the fact of our madness. We are so out of touch with with this realm, where the issue of our corrupted human condition lies, that many people can now argue seriously that it doesn't exist. That's a true description of our immensely insecure, soul-blocked-out and alienated human situation or condition. What I now want to describe is how being able to explain and understand our corrupt condition ends the need for denial of it, and how a whole new world opens up for the human race where we are free of the agony of the human condition. Finding the redeeming, guilt-lifting, good reason for our horrifically corrupted, angry, egocentric, and alienated human condition completely changes the situation we have been in. Now that we finally have the fully accountable and thus verifiable and thus trustable first principle-based biological scientific explanation of the good reason for why we corrupted our original all-loving and all-sensitive instinctive self or soul, our whole 2-million-year torturous condition ends. With the understanding of the human condition at last found, we are no longer trapped in Plato's cold, dark cave of denial and delusion, and we are free to come out into the warm, healing sunshine of the compassionate, full truth of the redeeming and dignifying understanding of ourselves. Our insecurity about being corrupted ends. We can finally understand that we are all good and not bad. And what this means is that all our old artificial, superficial, dishonest and deluded ways of coping are no longer needed. We are free to leave all that fake and in truth horrid practices behind as finished with. We can finally transition from living in a dreadful state of denial and delusion to living in a wonderfully transformed state of freedom from all the dishonesty and delusion that has made human life so fraudulent, mad, destructive, and chaotic. In fact, all the in truth extreme shallowness and emptiness and loneliness of that cold and dark, dishonest and deluded, immensely destructive existence is able to be replaced by so much relief, happiness, and healthiness now that we will find it's almost too exciting for our bodies to bear. We go from living an existence tortured by the horror of the human condition to a life free of that horror. Basically, we humans now come back to life after having had to endure living an effectively dead state. As with Life and Mind and R.D. Lang made clear, 2 million years of accumulated upset has left us in a numb, seared, effectively dead state. But we are finally free now from having to live trapped in Plato's deathly dark, deep, cold cave of denial and delusion. The whole human race wakes up from what has in truth been a terrible, terrible nightmare. We are free to all come back to life now. The great transformation of the whole human race is on. In chapter 9 of my book, Freedom, I describe how understanding the human condition obsoletes the deluded and artificial ways of proving we are good and not bad, such as by winning as much power, fame, fortune, and glory as we can, or by supporting a pseudo-idealistic cause like the environmental or PC woke movements that make us feel good. So these ways of living are obsoleted, which allows everyone to take up a fabulously relieving and healing transform way of living where you live in support of the redeeming understanding of the human condition. Well, Chapter 9 of Freedom gives an overall description of how this completely wonderful transformation takes place. Video essay 33 provides a specific description of how to let go and leave that old insecure, have to prove you're good and not bad ways of living and adopt a new human condition free, transform way of living where you can live a fabulously meaningful and joyous life in support of the redeeming understanding of our corrupted condition. What immediately needs to be emphasized here is that with humanity's immensely heroic, but at the same time immensely upsetting, search for the redeeming understanding, explanation or understanding of our corrupted condition finally over, not only can everyone leave the old, now obsolete way of sustaining their sense of self-worth and instead adopt the new transform way of living, everyone actually has to leave that old way of living and instead live in support of understanding the human condition. Now, what makes everyone have to make this transition is not the dictates from some outside authoritarian regime or the imposition of a dogma-based pseudo-idealistic culture, but the imposition of the unassailable logic that the old, selfish, artificial ways of living are destroying our world and making human life completely unbearable. And since those ways of living are now no longer needed, there is no justification at all for continuing that way of living. Adopting the transformed way of living is what everyone can and therefore has to do to save humankind. I should clarify, as I do in Freedom Essay 33, that the focus in leaving the old world of artificial reinforcement isn't on giving up your possessions or walking the streets in sackcloth in self-denial and servitude. We're talking about a change of mindset that can have an effect on your priorities, which can affect your choice of possessions and so forth. But the focus isn't on self-deprivation. I also want to point out that in my book, Death by Dogma, in paragraphs 85 and 86, I describe how we humans have always known that one day we had to mature from living in an insecure, competitive and aggressive state to living in a secure, cooperative and loving state. But being unable to confront the human condition and by so doing find the understanding that actually makes that transformation possible, out of sheer desperation, it was decided to just fake it to make it, which is what the critical theory-based PC, woke, great reset movement was trying to do. Now, while such fakeness was never going to work, as Death by Dogma makes very clear, it does reveal how intuitively anticipated and needed this great transformation is. So yes, taking up the transformed way of living is all important. That's absolutely true and fundamental. But the focus of this presentation is on what everyone will initially particularly want to know, and that is, how are we to cope with the initial shock of having our 2 million year corrupted condition suddenly exposed? How are we to manage the initial inevitable shock that the human race has to go through on the way to becoming transformed? As I depicted in my drawing of the stages humanity goes through in its progression from ignorance to enlightenment, it's inevitable that when understanding of the human condition finally arrives after 2 million years of living without it and having had no choice but to live in denial of the whole issue of our corrupted condition, the resigned world is going to be in shock at what has happened. Having become deeply attached and accustomed to living in denial of our corrupted condition, having the truth about that state suddenly revealed cannot help but come as a great shock. So I now want to present the focus of this talk, which is the shock of change stage that the human race now goes through. This shock of change progresses through a number of predictable stages, which I've illustrated with some drawings. It makes sense that initially everyone will be stunned for a little while, staggered by what's happened and in a state of overwhelmed astonishment, needing time to take in, absorb and adapt to what's occurred. The arrival of understanding of ourselves that the whole human race has so heroically fought, so long for, isn't initially met with celebration, excitement and relief, but by a great silence, nonplussed paralysis is more like what happens. In his famous 1970 book, Future Shock, I know Alvin Toffler was anticipating this initial bewildering effect of the arrival of understanding of the human condition when he wrote of, the shattering stress and disorientation by we induce in individuals by subjecting them to too much change in too short a time. Of course, what the minds of resigned adults quickly do to cope with this shock of having their corrupted condition exposed is to terminally apply the denial that they've been employing up to this point to hold that truth at bay. Basically, their mind doesn't tolerate admission of it. And the result of this defensive blocking out of description and analysis of the human condition in the minds of resigned adults is that they typically find it difficult to take in or absorb or hear what's being presented. Their mind doesn't let what's being said come through into conscious awareness. It suffers from what we refer to as the deaf effect. And this protective deafness can be extreme. I mean, as one resigned adult admitted, when I first read this material, all I saw were a lot of black marks on white paper. Since this denial is happening unwittingly, subconsciously, because the surface conscious mind obviously doesn't want to recognize and admit that it's being defensive, the surface conscious mind's natural response is to blame the presentation for its inability to hear it. I mean, typical responses include saying that the presentation is impenetrably dense and too repetitive of vague points and so badly written it desperately needs editing. In fact, the deaf effect is quite often so great that in frustration we are asked to please send me an executive summary because I can't make any sense of what you're presenting. However, this deaf effect can be overcome by persevering with reading about and listening to descriptions of the redeeming, reconciling, and healing explanation and how it makes sense of every aspect of human existence. With perseverance, the resigned mind gradually realizes that what is being presented is not condemning, but compassionate. And it's therefore safe now to learn about and finally understand the whole 2 million year immensely corrupting but immensely heroic journey the human race has been on to find this understanding of our corrupted condition. The following is a good example of someone patiently rereading and re-listening to the explanation and overcoming the deaf effect. May Gibbs, the founder of the WTM Phoenix Center in Arizona, America, said, "I tried for months to get through the reading material, but my thought at the time was that it was super tedious and boring." Now, saying it was super tedious and boring is a typical deaf effect response. The subject of the human condition has historically been so unbearably confronting and depressing that most people's minds just don't want to engage with it. And so defensively and dismissively, in effect, say, "I'm not interested in what you're talking about. It's just super tedious and boring. Rubbish, meaningless rubbish as far as I'm concerned." Now, significantly, when May Gibbs persevered listening to and reading the information and eventually got through the deaf effect, she said, "I find it laughable now how deaf I was, because here I am today obsessing over the freedom essays, videos, and Facebook group posts. It has brought such peace to my life, and I have a burning desire to get it to whoever will listen." Okay, and this is another comment about how perseverance overcomes the deaf effect. It's from Melinda Greenacre on the WTM's Facebook group. She writes, "Hello, I'm a first-time poster. Something weird is happening that I thought I'd share. I first came across this book, Freedom, in 2017 when I downloaded the free version, but I couldn't get past the first few pages. Then during the lockdown in 2020, I bought the paperback version for myself and my dad, but still couldn't get through the first couple of pages. It just didn't make any sense. I felt that the sentences were too long and rambling. Reading it made me tired. My mind would wander away every time, so I put it down again. But recently, in 2023, after seeing lots of WTM content pop up on social media, I started playing the main pinned interviews on the Facebook group in the morning as I was getting ready for work. A few tiny bits of information clicked into place. Nothing mind-blowing, but definitely a few aha moments. Today, I've been sitting at the bay waiting for my husband to finish a charity bike ride. I bought a coffee and thought it would be a good location to try reading the book again. In just over an hour, I've gone through 50 pages. I don't even remember why I found it so difficult. All of a sudden, it's making sense. I'm enjoying it. It's like I'm reading a different book. Now, you can also read a more in-depth description of this deaf effect problem in the Great Guilt video and in Freedom Essay 11 on our website. What will make all the difference to the initial huge problem of so many people suffering from the deaf effect and being unable to hear and appreciate these human race-saving understandings of the human condition is a critical mass of people appearing who have overcome the deaf effect and realised and are telling others that the human condition has finally been solved. People's willingness to persevere with listening and reading about the human condition rapidly increases once there's enough people saying that the redeeming and healing explanation of the human condition has finally been found and that it's now safe and necessary for everyone to learn about the human condition. So overcoming the huge problem of the deaf effect block and gaining a wide public acceptance and support for this absolutely critically important breakthrough depends on building a critical mass of support. Also, of immense significance to humanity, completing this journey to enlightenment is that once a person is able to overcome the deaf effect and can access and thus appreciate the explanation of the human condition, they are then in a position to take up the transformed way of living where they selflessly live in support of the understandings of the human condition rather than selfishly maintain their old, now obsolete and artificial power and glory, pseudo-idealistic ways of sustaining their sense of self-worth. Now, naturally, this transformation from the old habituated denial-based way of living doesn't happen immediately. The first response once a person is able to get through the deaf effect is to keep reading about and listening to explanation of the human condition and by so doing be able to make sense of every aspect of human life. Having lived without any truthful, accountable understanding of human existence, it's extremely interesting and relieving and healing to finally have such insight. So this guzzling of the truth about human life normally goes on in earnest in this initial stage. When resigned adults have more or less given up trying to find understanding of the nature and purpose of human existence because in their resigned state of living in denial of the human condition, all resigned adults subconsciously knew that all the mechanistic scientific explanations of human life are based on some on the same dishonest denial that they are practicing. Suddenly, there's so many accountable and clearly truthful understandings to digest. You can read more about mechanistic science's dishonest denial of the human condition in chapter 2.4 of Freedom. However, even though all these explanations about human existence are based on the compassionate, redeeming understanding of the good reason for why we humans became corrupted, these insights are not only going to be immensely interesting, they are necessarily also going to be exposing and thus confronting of all that corruption. Ideally, a person would be able to make sense of and heal all their soul damaged hurts they experienced growing up in an immensely human condition stricken world at the same speed as they're able to understand the human condition. But the reality is that understanding of our corrupted condition occurs much faster than we can connect with and dismantle all the layers of repressed psychological pain within us. In fact, it's going to take a number of generations for the understanding we now have of the human condition to heal all the psychosis in us. Because, I mean, knowing to the point of being able to be psychologically secure follows some time after understanding. And the degree we are still insecure is the degree we can feel confronted and exposed by the truth of our corrupted condition. The Truth Day, Honesty Day, Transparency Day, Exposure Day, Revelation Day, Come Clean Day, that the arrival of understanding of the human condition represents is actually the long-feared so-called Judgment Day, anticipated in religious texts. And even though Judgment Day is actually a time of compassionate understanding, not a time of condemnation, as an anonymous Turkish poet once said, Judgment Day is not the day of judgment, the day of understanding. It is nevertheless a time when the extent of our corrupted condition is revealed. Now, naturally, the more upset a person is as a result of their particular encounter with humanity's heroic but upsetting search for knowledge, the more upset there is to be exposed, and therefore the more confronting these understandings of the human condition will initially likely be. Even though upset has now been explained as an immensely heroic condition and that everyone is equally good and worthwhile, this shock of the sudden exposure of our upset condition can initially cause almost everyone, but the more upset in particular, to want to defensively retreat back into the habituated safety of Plato's dark cave of denial. There will be a temptation to want to deny and even determinedly attack analysis of the human condition. Indeed, we in the WTM have had to endure decades of this malicious and often ruthless attacks upon us and our project of delivering these human race-saving understandings of the human condition, which attacks you can read about in the persecution of the WTM essay. However, since this understanding of the human condition is what is desperately needed to save the human race from terminal alienation and extinction, retreating back into denial of all of the fully accountable, truthful understandings is not a viable option for anyone. So that leaves the question of how then is the upset human race, the more upset in particular, supposed to cope with the exposure? The obvious answer is that everyone needs to assess how much of the truthful explanation of the human condition they can cope with and avoid confronting more of it than their degree of soundness of self can cope with. Now, what this means is that the process of hearing and reading about the truthful explanation of all aspects of human life that is now available has to be tempered by how much truth a person can cope with. Guzzling this information can be dangerous. The reality is that everyone only needs to investigate these explanations of the human condition sufficiently to verify that they are the truthful explanations of the human race, that the human race has been so desperately in search of, and then avoid confronting and investigating them beyond what their security of self can cope with. On reaching that point, what each person needs to do is change their focus from studying the understandings to supporting them. Everyone should verify the truth, then support it at a comfortable distance from it. And living in support of these understanding, human race-saving understandings, is a completely satisfying, meaningful existence. So there's no particular negative or penalty or downside in not overly studying them. In fact, the transformed way of living, where you focus on living in support of these understandings, these world-saving understandings, is so exciting and fulfilling that, as I said earlier, it's almost more than our body can cope with. So the transformed way of living or state serves two purposes. It's how we leave the old selfish, now human race-destroying, artificial way of sustaining our sense of self-worth, and it's how we avoid overly studying the explanation of the human condition. And I should point out that, as I mentioned in paragraph 1188 of Freedom, in the old evasive world, to enter university, you had to pass an entrance exams that assessed your IQ, your intelligence quotient, and resulting ability to study complex subjects like higher mathematics or physics. Well, in the new human condition resolved new world, it similarly makes sense that the exceptionally sound, those with a high SQ, which is a soul or soundness quotient, are the ones most suited to studying the human condition. And there's absolutely no shame in that demarcation. Again, it's a fundamental insight that understanding of the human gives us of the equal goodness and worthiness of all humans. We humans have been involved in a great and necessary battle. So we have inevitably all been variously knocked around in that great battle. But we are all heroes. With those who don't have a high SQ, arguably the greatest heroes, because they must have been involved in the thick of the battle during the infancy and childhood. So exposure of our corrupted condition can be managed. And it should be pointed out that the human race would not have been so determinedly to find understanding of our corrupt condition if we didn't believe we would be able to cope with the exposure of it when it was found. I mean, so many of our songs that anticipate our freedom from the human condition are songs of rejoicement, and they wouldn't be so joyful if we thought that freedom couldn't be coped with. I know Freedom Essay 45 has lots of songs about the joyous anticipations of our freedom from the human condition. Another problem that develops as people digest these understandings of the human condition is what we refer to as the Mexican standoff. This is where a person knows and accepts that the explanation of the human condition is true, but struggles to let go of their old, now obsoleted, and now extremely selfish, destructive and dangerous ways of sustaining this sense of self-worth, and instead adopt the new transformed way of living. People can feel stuck between not wanting to retreat back into denial, but not yet being able to appreciate enough the immense importance and exhilarating benefits of taking up the transformed way of living. I think it's FAQ 1.23 provides a powerful description of the problem of the Mexican standoff. And in Freedom Essay 33, which I referred to earlier, I explain how to overcome the Mexican standoff by letting go of the now obsolete but often extremely strong habituated attachment resigned adults have to the power, fame and fortune and glory trophy room, ego castle, of pre-human conditions, of old world wins and successes, or of attachments to pseudo-idealistic virtue signaling strategies, and instead taking up the new, infinitely more satisfying and world-saving, important, transformed way of living. As with overcoming the problem of the deaf effect, the more people there are who appreciate that the transformed way of living is the only way to solve the world's problems, and also how relieving and exciting a way of living it is, the more encouraged and thus easier it will be for others to take up the transformed way of living. In fact, as I point out in paragraph 1207 of Freedom, where I talk about the importance and power of the transformed way of living, before long, those still living in the old embattled have to prove your worth way of living will feel like they have been caught wearing last year's fashions. What now needs to be explained is that while the fabulously meaningful and joyous human race saving new fashion of the transformed state is having to go through this inevitable but actually pointless initial procrastination, Mexican standoff stage, there are a number of devious maneuvers and avoidance strategies that occur, which we're in the WTM are all too familiar with. There's what we call pocketing the win, where people's attachment to their egocentric way of living, in which they sustain their sense of self-worth by building an ego castle of power, fame, fortune, and glory, wins can be so great that they avoid taking up the transformed way of living and instead focus on finding ways to selfishly benefit from understanding the human condition. This includes the blatant exploitation of the understandings, where people use the insights they have gained into human behavior to be an even more successful winner of power, fame, fortune, and glory. It's obviously a big advantage in business or competition to have insight into human behavior, but exploiting that to make yourself successful and financially rich in the old world is an obscene misuse of this world-saving information. As well as almost literally pocketing the win by ripping off the understandings to make yourself an old world legend, there are other pocketing the win responses that are more focused on finding ways to escape feeling cornered by the logic that says you have to let go your artificial ways of sustaining your sense of self-worth and instead take up the transformed way of living. We call such escapes from taking up the transformed way of living side-dooring. Feeling cornered by having to let go your now obsolete but habituated castle-building way of validating yourself does tempt people to try to find a side door way of avoiding the transformed way of living. To describe the most common example of this practice of side-dooring, it's natural and beneficial to continue studying explanation of the human condition and deepening your understanding of yourself and of the world. But when the Mexican standoff cornered feeling develops, this guzzling of the information can be developed into a way of avoiding the cornered feelings. Certainly, everyone needs to be using these understandings to help make sense of their lives and the world around them, and even to heal their version of humanity's 2 million years psychological upset. But to focus on doing that while avoiding adopting the transformed way of living when that is so needed, to solve the world's problems is at base another way of selfishly hanging on to rather than letting go the now obsolete and egocentric, I'm a legend, castle-building way of living. Making sense of your existence and healing your psychosis are very important activities to pursue, but they have to be tempered by the priority of the need to take up the transformed way of living that saves the world. And it has to be remembered that the transformed way of living is the best form of therapy for everyone's corrupted condition. So taking it up is actually the basis for the therapy that all humans need. These understandings do finally make the real therapy of our corrupted lives possible. And I and others in the Sydney WTM are writing a book about that real therapy that is now possible. So we're all fully aware of and recognize the importance of therapy. But while the priority is to save the world from imminent self-destruction through the adoption of the transformed way of living, such a selfish focus is another obscenity. There's a similarity between the transformed way of living and religious transformation that can that we can learn from. As I emphasized in chapter 9.5 of Freedom, the transformed way of living is not a religion, but both ways of living free you from your corrupted condition by living in support of something pure. In the case of religion, the pure life of a prophet, and in the transformed way of living, of a human condition understood pure new world. Well, in the case of Christianity, the 12 disciples, first followers of Christ, didn't properly see how the faith that Christ was introducing worked. I mean, venerating and worshiping Christ as they did was not the point. The real point of Christianity is to let go your embattled, overly upset, self-preoccupied way of living and instead defer to and live through your support of Christ. However, just as people have resisted letting go their upset way of living and taking up the transformed state where you live in support of the redeeming understandings of ourselves, so the disciples also resisted letting go their upset way of living and deferring to and living through the support of Christ. They complained that this is hard teaching. Who can accept it? It was actually St. Paul who came along afterwards, who realized the immense fall-off-your-donkey relief that living in support of Christ rather than in the way your corrupted condition wanted you to live was how Christianity works. The disciples loved the soundness of Christ, just as people love the sound understandings of the human condition. But it is living in support of the understanding of the human condition that transforms your life and saves humankind. Unless you take up the transformed way of living, you are not making proper use of being able to understand the human condition. The truth is that the various pocketing the wind strategies are stupid ways to live, given the world-saving importance and phenomenal excitement and satisfaction of taking up the transformed way of living. So pocketing the wind is not an attitude that will be popular for long. There are other ways of avoiding the subconscious Mexican standoff feeling of being exposed and cornered by these understandings that dictate you have to leave behind your power, fame, fortune, and glory castle building or your pseudo-idealistic ways of feeling good about yourself and take up the transformed way of living. These include finding supposed faults with myself or the WTM, such as saying, since Jeremy isn't resigned, he can't properly appreciate the lives of people who are resigned. So I know better, and this is what everyone should do, follow me. There's the strategy of siding with the angels, as we call it, where you delude yourself, you're an innocent person, uncorrupted by the human condition, and so don't need to become transformed. There's the ship at sea arrogance, where people who have managed to largely avoid resigning to living in denial of the human condition during their adolescence, those who refuse to pull into a port to escape the storms out at sea, as it were, that confronting the human condition causes, these people can feel so righteous and even innocent for not having resigned that they are not humble enough to admit their insecure egocentricity and resulting need to be transformed. Freedom Essay 60 has a good description of ship at sea arrogance problem. Other avoidance strategies include saying these ideas aren't original anyway, and I had already come up with these ideas. And for supporters of the New Age politically correct woke movements, deludedly saying it's nice to have you join us in creating a compassionate world. Clearly, what is needed in this early shock of change stage where all manner of procrastinations, exploitations, and avoidances inevitably occur is for exceptionally gifted, clear-sighted, St. Paul-like individuals to appear who are able to lead the way to a world where everyone is enjoying the all-meaningful and all-exciting transformed way of living, which is illustrated in the drawing of humanity's journey from ignorance to enlightenment by the person excitedly running to the all-wonderful transformed world. WTM founding member Anthony Tony Gowing and many other WTM founding members and WTM Center members closely behind him is just such a leader of this great breakout for the human race from the fast looming threat of terminal alienation and extinction of our species into a warm, sun, in other words, understanding filled, transformed state of unimaginable relief and happiness. You can read and hear Tony Gowing's inspired teachings about the transformed way of living in the transformation section of our website. Okay, so finally, humanity is coming back home to peace, happiness, soundness, and sanity. I just thought it might be helpful to conclude this presentation with a summary of the human journey using the caricatures I've drawn over the years for all the different stages in our species and in our own immensely heroic journey. All these stages are described in Chapter 8 of Freedom. This first drawing of a mother and child symbolizes the nurturing love indoctrination process that created our cooperative and loving moral soul and formed the original fully integrated state our ancestors once lived in, as depicted in this second drawing of the three people hugging each other. This next drawing illustrates how, when we became conscious some 2 million years ago, our original cooperative and loving instinctive self, the voice or expression of which is our conscience, in effect criticized our self-managing conscious mind's necessary search for knowledge, which upset us and caused us to become defensively angry, egocentric, and alienated, sufferers of the guilt-stricken, depressing state of the human condition. This next drawing shows us trying to understand why we corrupted our soul and became sufferers of the agony of the human condition. Then, unable to understand why we had fallen from grace, in other words, become corrupted, we eventually, from about 1.5 million years onwards, or about 15 years of age in the case of our individual lives, began to resign to having to live in denial of our corrupted condition and take up a life seeking the artificial reinforcements of power, fame, fortune, and glory to sustain our sense of self-worth. These next two drawings show how this defensive, angry, egocentric, and alienated way of living that developed more and more as our heroic search for knowledge, ultimately for self-knowledge, understanding of our corrupted condition, continued. The first image describes materialism like fast cars and so forth, serving our need for escapism and ego reinforcement. This second image shows upset developing to the extent that we become extremely egocentric and in need of artificial reinforcement and defensive responses to any perceived criticism. This next drawing shows how upset eventually became so extreme that we adopted all manner of artificial, pseudo-idealistic, feel-good, virtue-signaling ways of escaping, feeling that we were bad and unworthy. Eventually, disillusionment with the dishonest, deluded, pseudo-idealistic life forced many to return to the earlier soul-corrupting but knowledge-finding, power, fame, fortune, and glory-hunting to sustain your self-esteem, which only led to even greater levels of upset, which is the hollow, no soul left at all, extreme state of upset. The overall situation the human race had then arrived at was the completely alienated and mad state it has now ended up in. But then, on the threshold of terminal alienation and the extinction of our species, humanity's heroic efforts to accumulate knowledge has finally led to the finding of the reconciling, redeeming, and healing understanding of our corrupted condition, which obsoletes all our old artificial power, fame, fortune, and glory ways of sustaining our sense of self-worth. The initial problem the arrival of this dreamed-of understanding faces is that we've been living in such fear and denial of our corrupted human condition that we struggle to take in or hear the redeeming and liberating explanation of it. We suffer from the death effect. But then, after persevering and reading and listening to all the understandings of the human condition, we overcome the deaf effect and gain access to these utterly relieving and exciting understandings. But then, as we guzzle these understandings that finally make sense of ourselves and the world, we can become confronted by the exposure of our corrupted condition that the understanding causes. Basically, we can't absorb and adjust to all the liberating understandings fast enough to not experience some remaining fearful exposure from all the truth about how corrupted we actually are. In other words, while this exposure day or judgment day is actually a day of compassionate understanding, not a day of condemning judgment, there is still a potential to feel a degree of difficult self-confrontation. The solution to cope with that exposure is to not overly study the information more than our degree of soundness of self can tolerate. We only need to investigate the information sufficiently to verify that it's true, and then take up the transformed way of living, where we focus on living in support of this information that's needed to save the world. If we study the information more than our degree of soundness of self can cope with, we risk becoming furiously angry and defensive towards the information, an unconscionable response, because what we would be doing is condemning the human race to terminal alienation and extinction. The next problem is the Mexican standoff, where we don't want to deny or worse still, attack the truth, but at the same time, we are so habituated to living off our power and glory, artificial ways of sustaining our sense of self-worth, that we resist taking up the transformed way of living. We feel stuck, unable to go back and unable to go forward. In fact, this Mexican standoff can tempt us to pocket the win, as we call it, focus on benefiting from being able to understand ourselves and the world rather than focus on taking up the transformed state where we live in support of these understandings that alone can save the world. We can even be tempted to use the understanding to make ourselves an even more successful power and glory egocentric castle builder, which is the opposite of letting that way of living go and becoming transformed. Eventually, however, everyone realizes that the transformed way of living is the only responsible way to live, and it becomes a universal practice. And the human race is then freed at last from the human condition, and joy and happiness comes to planet Earth. So thank you all for listening.
That was Jeremy Griffith. You've been listening to Freedom Essay 16, which you can read by clicking on the Read Essay button on your device or by going to the WTM homepage at www.humancondition.com, where all the essays and videos can be found. As mentioned earlier, the transcript of this audio is also available as one of the key books on our homepage. To learn more about a topic that was raised in this podcast, please go to the written version of the essay, because it includes references to other relevant freedom essays, as well as the sources of any quotes used. These essays were created in 2017 to 2022 by Jeremy Griffith, Damon Isherwood, Fiona Cullen-Ward, and Ronnie Fitzgerald of the Sydney WTM Centre. I'm Tim McCartney-Snape. Thanks for listening.